September 29, 2021, it's the Watch for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Start with Blues to You, John Coltrane. Some Lunar Day, Gun Trzynski Duo Bayhead. Hope I got that right. Due to those fucking incredible software engineers that are starting with the Skype invention, I have with me via Skype, John Trzynski. Welcome aboard, John.
Happy to be here.
Right, and we got to thank right away Brother Bill Nace for making the connect.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I think he also aided and abetted another connect with your partner, Mr. Gunn. He's going to be on soon.
Oh, yeah,
but
great.
But you beat him to it. Anyway, really interested in your journey through music. So please bring me the earliest memory you still harbor.
Oh, man, I was thinking about this. I think, I had an older brother. I have an older brother. And they put me in the crib in his room when I was growing up. And I think I must have been 2, maybe 3 years old. And I think I just remember hearing this voice and this music just over and over again. And it was a few years later that I realized that it was Ozzy. And my brother was kind of just getting into the first couple of Ozzy Osbourne records, like Diary of a Madman. And so he was just jamming that while I was in the crib. And I think that was my first musical memory.
Well, it's a Watt for Pedro Show. There's no hard questions, no wrong answers. So don't worry, John. Now, man, a lot of cats on the show with experimental music seem to have older brothers and sisters. It's a trippy, maybe it's just coincidence, but so in the pad you guys grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Yeah, there was always drums around. My dad played the drums.
Ah!
And then
where were they set up? I'm curious.
Usually in the basement. You know, we always had like an old, this old blue Ludwig drum set that must have been his old drum set that I remember was always around. And then I think at a certain point they were like, here, you can just bang on this. So yeah, and my brother was also a drummer.
Well, I'm curious, so, your pop, how far did he take music? I mean, he kept these guys, so it wasn't just a passing thing.
Yeah, he was, I think he worked a little bit, as he had this band, and I remember him telling me that he toured a little bit and played as a house band up in Alaska for a while. And it was kind of just like 50s rock band. And then I think at a certain point he just, didn't pursue it any further. But he would come down and just, kind of play them every once in a while. So, yeah.
So what about the first record you bought with your own money?
First record, I think I went to the mall and I bought the U2 cassette for Joshua Tree.
And the first gig you went and saw?
Oh, man. So I had an older sister, too, and she actually took me to see Poison at the New Haven Coliseum, which was, it was torn down and turned into a parking lot a few years later. But
it makes me very sad.
Yeah.
Not.
maybe it was best if they
No, I gotta tell you, John, I could have seen the Stooges up in Hollywood, but I only thought there was arena rock. I didn't know about clubs. Me and D Boone, our first gig was T-Rex, 73, but same time with Stooges, and just didn't know about clubs. If you don't know, how do you know not to go or to go?
Right.
What about at school? Were you in the school band or the choir or shit like that?
Yeah, I think maybe around sixth grade, I got into they had like a little marching band. I think I played the big bass drum.
Because I was going to ask if you learned traditional or match.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely match.
Okay.
Yeah, I could never get the traditional grip thing down.
Well, if you're in the marching band, right, you're slinging the fucking field drum. But now if you're on the goddamn bass,
Right. You know, I never made that connection, but that maybe that was it. Maybe that was, you know, it just put set me on that path.
Oh, you don't know about that. Okay, well, you know where Trap Set came from?
I don't.
It's an abbreviation. Obviously,
I think I heard you talking about this with maybe Corsano.
Contraption.
Recently. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was kind of put together as they were doing it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But that's a trip. That's what's bitching in a way, right? DIY is earlier than, I don't know, Green Day, maybe? Blink 182. maybe, I don't know. Might go back to Walt Whitman and him putting out his own Leaves of Grass. You gave me this music here, some more of you and Mr. Gunn. I don't know how to pronounce this. EIP?
Oh, EIP, yeah.
Oh, it's an acronym.
Thank you. in the sky. Fluttering wings like a butterfly. And now the rain knocks on the window. The halo and the cat, your sigh of defeat. She said to me, you're already beat. So don't step out into the light. Just take off in the dark.
se gubiš u svojim mislima. Vreme je da krenem dalje, ništa me ne sprečava. Tvoje srce je bombona i sve je laka pesma. Pobuna se širi, a ipak ulice su prazne.
Watt from Pedro showed up. Chunky Music started off with the Gun Trusinski duo Bayhead with EIP. It's an acronym, people. And I can't tell you what it stands for, but use your imagination. K's got a new album, well, her first solo album. And here's the tune from it, The Ghosts. Her and her brother recorded it. He recorded her. He played a little piano. She got such a great bass sound. Neil Turpin out of that from Leeds in England, and he's got a brand new record. This is Drummer Man playing acoustic guitar. I mean, you went on to guitar. We'll get into that, right? Take Heart in the Dark. Ryan James Mabe, brand new. Meet Me Here, I think out of Bright. Turbo Trans Turisti, Croatia with Niste Nija Strasno. Excuse me for destroying it, yet another language. How, yes, no. Same land. The Sugar. My Life Up to This Minute. This is something I did with 1983 with a spoken word record Harvey Kubernick put out. English is Second Language. And I play everything on there, hollering and all those basses. It's trippy in those days, me doing something without D Boom. And finally, Slaughterhouse Percussion. Open Mouth Tape. And that was Trusinski. So, John, you know the trip about, not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon. So the basement, well, you got the basement going. And usually the guy in the rear with all the gear, right? Let's park at his house so we don't have to fucking wait forever to set up and tear down. So did you do the garage band, basement band, bedroom band trip?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I should ask you, when did you first jump on that shit?
The basement band or the drums in general?
The drums in general.
I must have been maybe 11.
Okay.
10,
and,
11
and,
around
and
there.
Any lessons outside of school?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, I think I tried that and, you know, and then I played a little bit in the marching band through, like, middle school. And
right,
then,
but that was no contraption, right?
No, yeah, just hammering the bass drum.
Right, right. But I love that fucking frequency.
Me too.
Right? There's some fucking punch going on. Did you have the big fucking furry mallets?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that was...
love that.
And I to this day, I still love a big furry mallet.
Steve Hodges. You know, I play a lot with Steve Hodges. He was on my first opera. I played with Mike McGinn and MSSV. And not only... big furry mallets, but calfskin heads.
Yeah.
Right? Get away that from that slappy plastic, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've always been like trying to get some kind of tones or melody out of the drums, and I don't know, I've always been drawn to that part of the drums.
Was a lot of your learning, it sounds like a lot of your learning was self-taught. Did you use records and headphones?
Yeah.
That's what George Hurley did. He bought The Who, My Generation, and who's that guy? Billy Cobham, Spectrum. And he taught himself drums with those two fucking records and a set of headphones.
Yeah.
He just beat it into himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely did that, too. A lot of, like, Sabbath, you know.
Oh, Bill Ward. I gotta tell you, the first four or five albums are so fucking happy, especially the second one. That shit is swinging. Man. And it's eight-track record. Half the tracks of the drums. But it's still like double nickels on the dime kind of. But he's really moving it. I mean, Geezer and the boss, you know, Tony, they're setting up the licks for him. But he's dancing around that stuff while still keeping it grooving. It's so amazing kind of stuff. And maybe it was not all the effects, too. Maybe it's such a clean recording in a way.
Primitive. Yeah, really raw. Those records are really raw.
Master's good too, but it was recorded too little. There's something about the second one, Paranoid. Yeah, where the drums are really sounding good.
That's always love Volume 4 too. That one.
That one's got a lot of competition with the organ and the synthesizers.
That's true.
But it's got really good tunes. I think really good tunes. And Bill's probably at the peak of his playing.
Yeah.
But he was reading interviews, very influenced by Ginger Baker, you know, because a lot of England guys, right? It was the blues and Charlie Watts, of course, king of that. And Ginger brings in this kind of jazzy thing. And nobody ever forgot the blues, of course, but he brought in this other thing that I think Bill Ward picked up on. Same way Geezer, in a way, kind of picked up on Jack Bruce, but on the bass, but they knew they were just starting in younger guys. So instead of all that jam, I think they, well, we got to write parts. But still, you don't play the same part twice the same way. Mm-hmm. Bill's fills are all like unique, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. He's pretty, I mean, well, one is just the speed too, you know? I mean, it was always like
very slow.
Just that kind of the slower speed seemed to, like, you know, I don't know, that just like resonated with me, and I'm always like playing too slow.
I can give you a little perspective. The guy who recorded Double Nickels on Dime, Ethan James, you know, he was in Blue Cheer, so he told me about those days, and he said the big prob that hard rock drummers had was rushing it.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do would eat a lot of downs, and then you could play really hard shit and you see like rush. So probably not good for the health.
Yeah.
Or anything
right,
else,
exactly.
You know? But he told me that was one of the techniques. A bunch of reds and then just play your ass off and you wouldn't rush it.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure that was going on with Bill.
Yeah.
For sure.
Really dangerous if you mix him with drinking. But I mean, this high, you're right, that tempo, by doing that, it gave him the room, because if he had to do, yeah, whatever, Bad Brain, maybe, you know, maybe a little tougher music to do that to, or Middle Class, or yeah. But it's just incredible how lyrical of a player he is. And in fact, I'm doing something now with a second man drummer for Joe Carducci and his brother, you know, and that's the role model, is that second album that they did. Wow. Okay, yeah. Tell me about the first gig you do.
First gig I did, I think it was some sort of a weird church community center / you know, our basement band got asked to play like a dance or something like that, and just, you know, it was just weird, because I think we were doing like Sabbath covers, and, you know, playing just weird little songs that we were trying to put together, so we probably played for like 25 minutes or something, and then the dance was over. That must have been, I don't know, I must have been like 13 years old or something like that.
Would you call it a success?
I don't know if I would.
Did they throw shit? I mean, did they boo you off? Were they fighting? I mean,
no booing, no fighting, just a lot of, you know, like, just a lot of weird kind of staring.
Ah, and maybe some like a chin scratch and some arm fold.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, we got put together with this event, and it was just, you know, everybody realized that it wasn't a good match, like pretty soon after we started. But no, I would say, you know, it was cool. It was like the first time just getting that energy of, you know, dealing with that tension of, you know, playing in front of people. Success as far as that.
Right. You broke the water.
Yeah.
Right. Now, early on, you were like me and D Boone, right? You guys are learning off records and stuff, but do you get into like starting to try to compose on the drums?
Maybe not consciously, but I think I was starting to, and this is probably early on, I started playing guitar too. So I ended up, and that was just me just fucking around and definitely just like listening to records and just trying to like put it together. And then I think, you know, I got a little bit more into, you know, maybe thinking about the composition or just thinking about the structure of the songs the drum.
Back then, did you get a four track or some shit like that where you could actually play some guitar along with your drum?
I did that later on, yeah. I remember doing that maybe a few years later, you know, just starting to do like demos where I would play the drums and just kind of sing into my head and then play the guitar, maybe try to throw down the bass. You know, just piece.
You oh,
know,
you
piece
got on together. The bass too. All right.
Yeah, I got into the bass. I still love the bass, you know. Yeah.
What kind you got?
I don't have one now. I've been mostly just, you know, fucking around with like synths and stuff, but just like getting, you know, I just love like low frequencies.
Oh, you mean like left handed piano? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Keyboard bass. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Man, sometimes that can get legato, it can get fat. Mm-hmm. Some shit you can't do on the bass guitar, so. But much respect for the bass clef. Goes back to that fucking bass drum you were beat. So, the guitar, you never got lessons?
No, I never did that. I never got lessons on the guitar.
That's okay. Autodidact. I'm into it. after high school, did you go to higher education for drumming?
Not for drumming, but I ended up... I ended up going to school, and I ended up becoming a sound engineer.
Ah, okay.
So I did that for a few years. I ended up working in recording studio for a while, and you know.
Yeah,
that was
but I'm really digging musicians learning that stuff. There used to be a great divide, right?
Mm.
But technology, more econo, I think it's you don't have to pick either or. You can and.
Yeah, and I think it was like at the time I was just pretty into just playing in bands and you know it was kind of a way to get access to the studio too, you know, just be able to use it.
Practical, yeah, smart.
Yeah.
What did someone once told me? The future belongs to the efficient. Oh yeah, okay. But no, but that's a good idea though. Especially if you want to get your ideas without a middleman in between, maybe. Or the econo thing. Or the access. Yeah, like you were talking about. That makes a lot of fucking sense. But I also think you get at the fundamentals, right? Because you start have to understanding what sound is. What are frequencies? Mm-hmm. What are rhythms? What are oscillations and resonances and this? And that's musical. And, you know, if it goes to like getting it on fucking piece of medium. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, right. Okay, so you learned that, but by doing that, you had to work with musicians, right? Or at least their works.
Yeah, definitely. You know, working as a professional engineer is definitely, you know, it's a grind. I have mad respect for anybody who does it, you know, because it's pretty hard on your ears, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And also your discipline for your attention and tolerance of fucking assholes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, much, much respect. I'm right with you on that, John.
That's hard. It's hard work, man. You know, and it's hard to, like, play. It's hard to do anything, like, creatively, you know, when you're kind of, when you're also working as an engineer.
You mean, like, it saps all your stuff, so when it's time for you, there's nothing left?
It can get that way. That's actually kind of why I stopped. I did it for a few years, and I loved being in the studio and making a record with people. You know, I definitely love that experience. But, you know, just having to do it day after day and, you know, some of the bands were not necessarily my favorite bands that I had to work with, but,
clients,
you know,
clients.
What's that?
Clients.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool. It was kind of cool too, because, it sort of forced you to have to find your way into almost anything, you know?
Yeah, sure,
and
sure.
Just kind of hear it.
For sure, develop some people skills. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. September 29, 2021. Bob Peter, so special guest, John Krasinski. Hold tight for hour two. September 29, 2021. It's the second hour of the Lock for Pedro show. Thank you.
Take up thy walking stick and hobble. Thank you. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Second hour started off with John Krasinski solo guitar. That's a great band name. Ash Tree. Ben Salter after that from Tasmania with Defeat. Graf out of the Netherlands with Frost. If Bawana from Chester, New York. Al Margolis. Bot.org. Brand new. And then Gunn, Krasinski duo, Ocean Parkway this time. Minetta River. So, John, tell me the difference between Gunn, Krasinski duo, Ocean Parkway, and Gunn, Krasinski, Bayhead.
Maybe I fucked up the name structure. But so Ocean Parkway was a record we did. And then the song Minetta River was one of the songs on that. And then Bayhead was also a record. And then I think, Some Lunar Day was a song on the record.
Okay, I remember the instructions were just song and artist proj, band name. I don't remember asking for a record names. So, like I said, the mind reading thing, if I don't fucking know, I don't know. So I thought it was the name of the band. But dudes do this. Dudes will rename their bands for their projects. Well, or slightly different. But look, fuck that. Let's get into Gunn Krasinski. How'd this get together?
Maybe around 2004, I had been living in Western Mass and I moved to New York City. And, I had a friend, Pete Nolan, who's in doing Magic Markers and different bands.
I shared a stage with him once.
Yeah, right on.
I think because of Thurston. Maybe it was all Tomorrow Party or some shit. Yeah.
And, so I was playing with Pete a little bit in New York when I first moved, and he was also playing with Steve, and so we got together and we were jamming, and that's
Steve,
how I met Steve.
Steve who?
Steve Gunn.
Ah, okay. Because I thought you met Steve Shelley.
Oh, yeah, no.
There's a couple of Steves out there, so help me, John. Okay. So it's a chance meeting like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we played in we played with Pete a bunch and just played in different bands over the years in New York, and then we just started doing more and more often. We just started playing as a duo, and then maybe around 2008, 2009, our paths just kind of lined up, and we just started playing pretty intensely. And developed this musical relationship that, we're still playing, and, it's been a really rewarding thing to know him and play with him. And so it's been great. But so I met him back in New York City. And
right. You came together to help this other man's music, right, Pete?
Yeah. Yep.
And then you guys went to collaborate to make you guys' music.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's how it happened.
That sounds pretty organic and pretty happening. And what's the process? Like, who goes first, or does somebody make demos, or things are improvised, or?
No, yeah, it's pretty much totally improvised, and then these different kind of themes will come out, and then at a certain point we started making records, and we started trying to dial in different modes, So I would pick some things to give it a little structure. Like, I would just say, all right, I'm just going to play these three sounds, but I don't know what I'm going to do with them. And then we would just kind of improvise, and it just grew. It was sort of like a weird hybrid between trying to compose stuff and then leaving it loose.
Ah, okay. Because I've always been curious about that process. Like what I asked you, who goes first? Now you
were
saying,
depends.
Yeah, well, you were just saying, I got some ideas for some sounds. So sometimes Steve, he presents you with the same sitch.
Yeah. Sometimes he'll come in and he's got an idea that seems to be coming out, and then we'll just play, and we can kind of, I don't know, it's been really cool because it's just been about kind of listening to each other. I mean, the form of the music isn't too radical or anything, but, it's, it's sort of just about like listening to each other and going from there, I guess.
It's probably trying to develop a fucking interesting conversation, right? Look, you gave me this other proj, X0, or maybe it's X04.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with XO4 with part one of All Alien. I know Alien. Was there supposed to be a T there?
Oh, that might have been a typo.
Okay. See, it's hard to know this shit. But, you know, Watt's a slow learner, but he will keep attempting to get a handle on what you're trying to deliver to me. So it's Alien. It is a word I know. Okay. And then John Coltrane, Nagasaki by Bloodkin. Got to say, a big memory for the singer, man, Danny, who wrote the song. The cancer killed him a couple of years ago. And Jim Tremaine flubbed that on to me. Because last week was John Coltrane B-Day. And next week, a whole version of Love Supreme from that's around those Seattle, Live in Seattle days is coming out. We'll all go to heaven when the devil goes blind from up around the sun. That's Tim Kerr's new project. From Big Boys in Austin. Babes, New York City. Man, that name of that band. I just can't help. But does the sun... Yeah, I mean... I'm not going to get into it, but because everybody's got the right to name themselves. They don't need permission from that asshole, Pedro. Head Boggle, brand new off his new album, Strange Invaders, is a song. And finally, Sound for Andy Warhol. Paul's Kiss, there should be apostrophe in there. Man, I'm going to have to spell check this shit when I get it from people. No, John, don't worry. Keep hitting them sticks, bro. Kim Gordon, Bill Nace, Steve Gunn, John Trzuski. So this is this is like a collab between Body Head and Gunn Trzuski duo.
Yeah, that was really lot of fun.
Yeah, how did it come about? Tell me about it.
Kim was doing, she got asked to do a solo show at the Warhol Museum.
And, Pittsburgh. I've been to it. So I think it's a 7th Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so she had this idea of, you know, she was playing a lot with Bill, and, you know, she had gotten into the Gunn Trzuski duo stuff, and had this idea of kind of bringing the two duos together, and we did a live soundtrack to that film, and then, you know, we recorded that record, and, you know, did a performance, and it was a lot of fun.
Film? Was the film Andy Warhol's Kiss?
It was, yeah.
Okay, so I've never heard of that film. So is it doc?
No, it was like part of his, he did this series of films where, and I think he did one called Sleep. And
oh, yeah,
like
of course.
People sleeping. So this one was just different couples kissing.
Okay.
You know, it's basically just like a reel of different couples kissing. And so she wanted to, she selected that one to do the soundtrack.
With Andy watching, of course. Andy watching.
Yeah.
And tell me about XO4.
So XO4, that was actually with Bill Nace.
Bill.
So that was a duo that we had. We're this guitar duo thing, and then we eventually started playing with a friend of ours, Jake McGinsky, and it was a trio. But that the track he played is one of the early things we did, just as a duo.
And is XO4 an ongoing concern?
You never know when we might come off the bench and do a gig or something, but it's been a while since we played. I think maybe the last time we did a show was around 2012 or so. But, you know, we're all still friends. We all still play music, and but we haven't done much in recently.
Yeah, Bill's in Philly.
Yeah, he's in Philly.
You're in Connecticut.
Jake's up in Western Mass.
Yeah, which ain't too far from you.
No, we're all a couple hours, you know, drive. From each other.
I-95-able.
Yeah. Like driving down to San Diego or something.
San Diego, about 120 miles from Pedro. Philly, about 100 miles from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm learning. We're at the end of the second hour, September 29, 2021. Dish Watt Pedro, so special guest, John Trzuski. Hold tight for hour three. September 29, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. After Pedro Show, we start off the third hour. Joe McPhee, Jake Brzezinski, and John Krasinski with Excerpt, which was a live at Bennington College concert. I got to meet Joe McPhee, very kind of me. And man, he's a great musician. Tell me about Jake Brzezinski. I got to learn about him.
Yeah, Jake, he's another cat from the Western Mass area. Then, you know, we're all kind of up there around 99, 2000, early 2000s, and met Jake. And then he was also a drummer. You know, when it was cool, like that time in that area, there was a ton of really good drummers around. You know, Chris Corsano was up there.
Oh, I love that man. I love that man.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's in Ithaca now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We played after that Trubakova Kuštaj Pesci, Slovenian piece, which means dance. And then Vermes do Limbo out of Brazil. Yeah, vermin, limbo, worms. Yeah. Get together. What? Peritando and Prospect Range from John Krasinski, solo guitar. And, when you're composing on the guitar, a little noodle-roni, how do you do it? I mean, as opposed to on the drums.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't feel that different. I
that's a good thing. That ain't a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I really hate this fucking hierarchy, you know, with people working music. All instruments in my mind are created equal. As far as delivering sound, at the end of the day, right? Pay no attention to those people behind the curtain. However they did it, they did it. But I'm curious, and I think you're more of a man of the future. You know, these people who can record, who can play a drum, can play a guitar. Why not? It's all vocabulary.
Yeah, I think as I go on, I'm less and less concerned with, you know, kind of trying to master a single instrument and more just getting into sound and just thinking about, you know, how things sound and just finding the music in that. And, you know, I mean, definitely being loose and comfortable with the materials is a part of that. But, you know, I don't know. I never could pick one and just stick with it.
Can I ask you to pick a drum hero that influences you?
Oh, man, there's so many.
You know, John Coltrane got asked, who's your favorite tenor player? He said all of them.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
I know. Actually, that's a beautiful. You know, the dude who just starts, John Coltrane, is saying it.
That's the cool thing.
I love it.
The cool thing about the drums is that everybody kind of has their own, like, little take on it, you know?
Right.
No matter.
Well, do you have a hero for guitar?
Not so much. I probably have more drummers that, you know, that I was obsessed with. You know, definitely Milford Graves.
Oh, yeah. Great cat.
You know, Ed Blackwell.
Yeah, yeah. Much
You know, obviously, you know, Bill Ward, we already talked about.
Yeah, yeah, big respect.
There's tons of them. Okay. Steve Shelley, you know, we talked about him. We mentioned him before. You know, he was a big. Yeah, I always loved his playing.
Well, look at him in Thirst's World. He's going to always be there for Thirst. Uh-huh.
Thank you. God is good to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I nearly lost my foothold. For I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from common human burdens. They are not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. Their evil imaginations have no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. With arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. They say, how would God know? Does the Most High know anything? This is what the wicked are like. Always free of care, they go on amassing wealth. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure and have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been afflicted, and every morning brings new punishments. If I had spoken out like that, I would have betrayed your children. When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply. Till I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. Surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly are they destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. There I can dream when one awakes. When you arise, Lord, you will despise them as fantasies. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterward, you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all who are unfaithful to you. But as for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the Sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds.
last music for this edition, Muff Pedro Show.
For a Man of Pharaoh, John Tosinski.
Psalm 73, the Eminence from Gets Called Out, Joe Frank tribute version from Mountain Offensive, Brother Philip Mammoth. And finally, Paradise Merchandise, Gun Tosinski duo Soundkeeper. Yeah, what the fuck? I think there might have been some pilot error on behalf of your host there. And now, Soundkeeper, this ain't a band. This is probably a record that the Gun Tosinski duo did, right?
You got it.
Okay, I'm learning. So, I thought you had three different bands here. Okay. And is this more recent?
Yeah, this one came out last year.
Okay. And how has the band evolved?
Well, I think we started out and we were kind of digging the Sandy Bull records. You know, that sort of was, and we got to do a little bit of, you know, his daughter had the documentary that she did a few years ago, No Deposit, No Return Blues. Uh-huh. And we got to do some gigs around that when it came around. And
How? What was the connect?
It's a good question. I think Steve Gunn, okay. he somehow met her, Casey, and, Casey Bull, and you know, I forget how it all came together, but we did you know, one of the screenings of the documentary in New York, we played as part of it, and so we kind of started from there. And it was like Steve was playing acoustic, and you know, I was really doing my best to channel my own version of, you know, Billy Higgins or something.
Sure.
But and then I think we just started trying different things from there. And
Raymond, Raymond Pettibone took me to see Billy Higgins once. And we're like, it's at Catalina on Kawang up in Hollywood. And like, we're one table from him. And that guy looked at me the whole it was like my gig. I fucking couldn't believe it.
Heavy.
Playing his ass off and like and laughing and smiling. Elvin did do shit like that too, but Billy Higgins did it. A whole gig. It was like my gig.
Man,
and this is one of the first ones he brought me to like this. I didn't know anything about that scene and stuff, and I learned, I still am, and way into it. And wow. Also, he did beautiful stuff with Miles and Ornette, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and Sandy Bull, I know. Yeah, incredible. You know, when you do stuff like that, you know, the shift, the people who weren't around in those days, you make their music live. It's a great thing a music cat can do for another, I think. You know?
Mm.
Yeah, I do. So it ain't just stay in, get mold on it or never get heard, you know? I think it's, mm-hmm. it's really beautiful you can do it. What about at your pad? Do you have a drum setup? Can you play anytime you want?
Not so much these days. But, you know, I do have them around. So, you know, and I have neighbors. So, you know, I'll set them up.
So maybe a little more guitar playing at home.
I'll get 10 minutes in and then, you know, shut it down or something.
So I was getting at, do you use some of your recording skills at home?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, mess around with the electronics or the guitar at home. Always have like a 12 string. I've been playing this past like year and a half, mostly just been like playing acoustic guitar and not doing too many gigs, obviously. Just did the first one a couple days ago, actually.
Okay, congrats. Now, did you ever make a linkage between you, the drummer man, and drum machines?
Yeah, I tried a little bit. I never quite found some inspiration to do that. But
you know,
I love
you know
it,
I'm thinking
you know?
Of? I'm thinking of Ikwe Mori. She left uh-huh. the drums all the way, right? Just to do.
Yeah.
I saw DNA 79.
Oh, hell
they
yeah.
came out and played the Hong Kong Cafe in Chinatown here. And it blew, they didn't have Robin on the organ. They had Tim Wright on the bass, and they blew my fucking brain. They were bad. That was a bad band, man. I loved it. What's your next plan?
you know, just keep on, I guess. Yeah, keep on keeping it.
Right, where can people find you on the internet, John?
Well, you can find me at johntrzynski@gmail.com. That's about it.
Okay. And advice to future drummer guitar players?
Shit. Listen to your heartbeat.
That's a beautiful one. And you come back on the show, please, when you and Steve get some new stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. Thank you so much, man.
Absolute, absolute. Man, you deserve, brother. People, it's been September 29, 2021, this WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.